Good morning on a Tuesday. Jim Costa with John Jansen, Heather Park, Gov, and Greg behind the glass. We have a busy Tuesday show today. Good morning, John.
We sure do. Good morning. How are you?
Good.
It's great to see everybody this morning. How was your Monday night?
Monday night was fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Heather, yours?
It was uneventful, which is good.
That's always a plus. Yeah. Yes. Ours was as well. So happy about that.
Happy I was asleep for the Red Wing game. We'll get to that in a second. We have a show today that features the two Grand Slam, and I stress the bar is low today. If you don't hang up during the game, you will do better than our last contestant. You don't have to get anything right. Just try for the full 60 seconds.
Yes.
You have a chance at 7:25 this morning to win some money. Can we set the bar any lower? I don't think so.
No.
We have a question for a specific section of Lions fans later this hour, from doubters to believers. We've got Greg Palm. Another edition of the college football rankings. Who's in, who's out? We're getting closer to actually locking in our first 12-team playoff.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. And it's unique. It's providing its own, what Greg Palm is providing its own entertainment. The college football playoffs with 12 teams is providing its own unique intricacies.
For everybody said the regular season is going to get watered down, I'm looking at the last 2 weeks and I'm seeing 20 plus teams that all have something to fight for right now. There's more meaningful games now at this point in the year than we've ever had.
Yeah, it is. But the disappointing part, I think, is the fact that the Lions did so well that we didn't get a chance to talk about a two-game win streak for the Pistons. I was hopeful last night that they would have put together their first three-game win streak, because we know, obviously, with
Doug Karsh,
bet last year that they didn't get three in a row, and I thought last night was the perfect opportunity, because if they had won, not only would it have been a three-game win streak, they would have been back to 500. They were playing a Bulls team that they should have beat. They're getting on Thursday night an opportunity for a redo down in Charlotte. For the tip-in that lost the last one, I thought, man, this is a great opportunity. We can have a little excitement. No. You can only have one good thing at a time.
Listen, and we'll take the Lions leading the pack right now. Yes. The Lions are potentially saving Derek Lalonde's jobs right now.
Because who's talking about him?
No, nobody's talking about the Red Wings, who just went 0 for California on this West Coast swing. 0 for 3. They lost last night. They were outshot in all three games. Lalonde's very fortunate. That was a 10:30 puck drop. Many of you did not watch, and many of you have been wrapped up in this Lions fever. But the Red Wings, as you wake up today, have the fewest points in the Eastern Conference. They're a terrible 5-on-5 hockey team. Bottom five in shots for and against, and two teams worse than them, Sharks and Ducks, just beat them on this West Coast trip, John.
They are, in their last 11 games, 3 wins, 8 losses.
They've been outshot in 14 of the 18 games. Are you guys getting a theme here? This is not a good hockey team.
Here's where I can't. How come they can't get more shots? 34-20 last night, but even worse, outshot 10-3 in the third. You only put up 3 shots in the third period? Really?
Close hockey game, too. And some of those came on the power play at the very end. Right. So they really were going 1-2 shots for most of the final period. John, they're outshot 41-18 against the Kings on Saturday. And I get it. It's a football weekend. No one's watching. And that might be the saving grace for the pressure on Derek Lalonde. But it doesn't change the reality. And I'll be honest with you guys. The reality is more than just Derek Lalonde. This is the roster assembled by Steve Yzerman 6 years on the job. We can talk about firing Derek Lalonde, and I think it's a conversation people are having right now. It doesn't change the bigger issues with this hockey team.
Now,
that's not me sticking up for Lalonde. I mean, the NHL coaches are hired to be fired. They're fired more often than pro football, than MLB, than
they're
NBA.
They're fired quick. I mean, we've seen coaches fired, 7 games in? We've seen them fired at any point during the season, and teams actually recover from it.
Yeah, last year, 3 teams fired their coach and made the playoffs. One of them made the Stanley Cup. 14 coaches have been replaced in the last season. That's almost half the league has turned over their coach. Some of them were playoff teams. Some of them were teams that made deep playoff runs. These teams have all been very quick to move on from their coach, because if this guy's message is running thin, if they're not getting production out of their guys, they want to spark that locker room. It's frequent that we'll see coaches fired in the NHL. We've had 20 coaches hired the last 2 seasons. 2/3 of the league has been hired the last 2 seasons. So the idea that Derek Lalonde's job is safe, it's not. I mean, it's only Yzerman that's keeping his job safe at this point.
Well, and the biggest difference from last year to this year is last year, how many at halfway through the season, we talked about how many guys were scoring goals, that mm-hmm. there was offensive production. The excitement was you didn't really know who was going to come from, and so you just didn't care. It just as long as it happened. This year, I mean, the differential right now, minus 14, they can't get shots. They can't score. And it's a painful watch. And I don't know how many times I have to say this, where, you know, you watch the first period, and you're like, oh, okay, here we go. Yeah, right. And then you watch the second, and you're like, what am I watching? And then you watch the third, and you're like, it just got worse. Like, can they please play three periods in one game?
This goes back to the end of last year, which is when we were talking about Lalonde. John, that game last night, they had a 2-1 lead. They had a 3-2 lead. They had a big emotional game-tying power play goal in the final 2 minutes of the third period. Hey, momentum's going to swing their way. They're the better team, right? San Jose's one of the worst in hockey. Whatever happened, you get to overtime, you get your point. Now you go for the win, and it's a rookie, Macklin Celebrini, who's celebrating as the Wings lose again. 0 for California, 0 for 3, 1-4-3 on the road trip because they beat Pittsburgh to kick it off. But, John, it's just not good enough, and I wonder when something happens.
Like Thursday night.
Okay.
Thursday night, they're saving it up for the return of Jim Costa to the LCA.
Because exactly what you need right now is me walking in the building. I am 0-3 as a fan this season, as a paying customer.
Going to have to break it at some point.
And they've lost by at least 3 goals in all 3 games that I have been to. So, yeah, you know what this team needs right now is another one of those on Thursday. John, if they lose on Thursday, I might just lose it. I mean, this is ridiculous. Maybe I will officially be on the fire Lalonde train at that point.
You're on the edge.
I feel like I am.
You're standing up, looking over the abyss.
You didn't think they'd be this bad.
Nobody did. No, I mean... I thought that they will, and they're not out of contending for a playoff spot. All right, so right now they're 3 points back. So yes, they're tied for last place in points, tied with the Blue Jackets and the Canadiens, but they're not 100% out of it by any means at this point. But I thought that if this is where it's frustrating. If they could at least get shots, if they could at least score a little bit or play consistent hockey, they would be right in the thick of it.
Thing is, though, I don't know how the 5-on-5 gets better.
Well,
other than the younger guys improving slightly over the course of the season. And that's when you play the majority of your hockey. So while you're right, they're only, I saw that they're 3 out. I mean, they play the Bruins on Saturday night. I just don't know where the fix is with this. Like, even if you fired the coach, I'm not quite sure. You get that oomph, you get that energy, you get the new voice, but that wears off, you know? I don't know. I think it's very bleak where this team's headed this season.
I guess what's the alternative to not firing Lalonde?
There isn't one right now.
Right.
The off-season decisions that were, what? They weren't, like, humongous decisions for the course of the franchise, but... They seem to be not the right ones, you know?
Well, I remember we were the bad guys for pointing out that they didn't add a high-impact player this offseason. So it's a question about Steve Yzerman, right, and the urgency. You're in your 6th season. I know you don't want to hand out term. God forbid you overpay for a good hockey player. You got too many good ones on the team right now. Am I missing something?
I mean look,
there should be heat on Steve Yzerman because the roster is his. To your point... sure, they could make a coaching change. I think you could justify it right now. It doesn't change the issues with the roster that he built.
Well, right. They didn't want to get Stamkos because they didn't want to do the term. But then if you look at what Nashville's doing so far, they're not playing good hockey either.
Well, it doesn't have to be Stamkos.
Right. I know. But, I mean, at what point, what fish was out there that was bigger than him almost?
Right.
You know, so, again, it's just...
Well, the Kraken added Brandon Montour, who was a top pair defenseman on a Stanley Cup team, but he got a 7-year deal, and can't do that.
Exactly. No, I mean, I just don't know at this point. It seems that firing Lalonde is almost imminent in normal NHL cities, but for some reason, he's getting all this time. I mean, you just made the point, 14 coaches fired, and this is what happens in hockey. And it'll be interesting to see how they play Thursday night when they come home, and then Boston. They have a lot of games. They got like 5 or 6 games like up till Thanksgiving, and including Black Friday. I just don't see how this turns. I've watched enough hockey in my life. Fixing 5-on-5 is a tough go. Yeah, when
that's your spine. Your 5-on-5 is your spine. That's your backbone. If that's fractured, you're never walking. I mean, that's just the reality.
20% of the season's almost over. You know, Thanksgiving is often the first barometer hockey people use to kind of gauge, okay, here's who's competing and here's not. And what, you know, kind of makes everything convoluted in hockey is the stupid overtime loss. I mean, I look at it, they're in a 7-11 hockey team. Yeah. They won 7 games, they lost 11.
Yeah.
You got 2 overtime losses, so it's 7-9-2, and it sugarcoats what you are. I mean, last night was a dichotomy of exactly what this team is. You know, get the power play hot, can almost win a game. Just remember who they lost to on this trip.
Well, that's the thing, because we're all talking about the offense. But what about the defense? Like, you're talking about Anaheim, LA, and San Jose. Do any of these strike fear offensively into many other franchises?
Anaheim and San Jose are two of the worst offensive hockey teams.
And they outshot you 34-20 last night.
Yeah,
right. I mean.
So, yeah, uplifting start to the show. 248-539-9797. We will be talking a lot of Lions, an uplifting story, and how all the doubters are starting to become believers. We'll do that at 6:50. College football playoff rankings coming up at 6:35. The latest from Greg Palm. We are going to get some of your thoughts on the Red Wings, Heather's news, and more. It's 97.1. Let's talk about your teeth. Some of you have skipped going to the dentist. You just stopped going altogether. It can be stressful, but it doesn't have to be. Brightside Dental, there's no judgment. Use your dental benefits before the year ends. It could be getting in for an exam, a cleaning. If you need braces, Invisalign, they've got deals for new customers as the year wraps up. 9 Metro Detroit locations. Give them a call, 1-800-PAINLESS, brightsidedental.com. Let's get an appointment there before the end of the year. Brightside Dental, no judgment, just care. All right, we'll get Ticket Text in the mix. Red Wings lost last night, and Derek Lalonde, very fortunate. That was a 10:30 game. Many of you did not stay up for it. Derek Lalonde, very fortunate that the Lions are so good. Many people are paying attention to them, dominating the Detroit sports scene. People might not realize the Red Wings just went 0 for California. Losses to the Ducks, Kings, and the Sharks. They were outshot 104-63. Say that again. 104-63, not even close, and they've been outshot in 14 of their 18 games this season. Clearly, firing Derek Lalonde is on the table. But firing him doesn't fix the Yzerman mistakes. This is year 6. This is his roster. Season's slipping away, though, John. 14 NHL coaches have been replaced in the last year. I don't see why Lalonde would be special, why he would be exempt from that. This league churns coaches.
Well, it does, but Yzerman doesn't.
Right. Well, then more goes on his plate for this.
Well, I agree. I mean, but that's the thing is when you look at his track record, I mean, he's been very patient with coaches.
I don't think you can ask fans to be patient anymore. I really don't.
So my opinion from afar is, first off, this team doesn't have a superstar, and I don't think this team has a high-end caliber all-star, okay? Dylan Larkin's a really nice player, but he would be a second-line center on most teams. All right, so I think talent is always the big thing in sports, right? But I'm a huge believer in team chemistry. I don't think this team has any. I think this team is missing a couple things that these might be cliche terms. But, John, we were talking in the break, and you agree. They don't have a dog. They don't have a dirt bag. You need dogs and dirt bags. You need these guys that stir the pot the right way to get everybody to a common goal. And it just seems like this team's allowed to go through the motions 5-on-5 on the ice, and there's no accountability. Like, I almost say, like, the fix is, you know what? Fire the coach. Yzerman, take a chance and call up Danielson. And you take him under your own wings and tutelage and say, I want you to just go out there and let it fly. And whatever mistakes happen, happen. You got to try to infuse something into a team.
Some ticket text phone calls. Texter says Lalo needs to go immediately, all caps. Another one says, bring in Quinville. Texter says, I'll say this over and over again. They need a coach who's harder on him, like Mike Babcock. Texter says, Costa, just put on the car flags. We need to try something. Mike and Goodrich, try to spark them.
Yeah, I mean, throw on the car flags Thursday night on your way down. What's there to lose?
What's the harm at that point? Right now, bring up the kids.
Self-respect.
Yeah, who's this jackass driving in. Texter, is that how my car sounds? I think it sounds more like a spaceship than the sad sound you just made. Texter says, bring in Gerard Gallant. Team needs a 180. Call up some young kids. Texter points out it's not a coaching issue. It's a Stevie Y issue. Another one echoes that, yes, Lalonde would be the scapegoat, but Iserman's issues. The veterans aren't leading the way. He has spent the cap space. They don't have a goalie. It's all pathetic. There's no defense, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Let's get to Doug in Ypsilanti. Doug, good morning.
Good morning. Hey, your Texter kind of took a little bit of my point, but I think firing Lalonde, it's got to be the first step to saving his own job. If he comes home on Thursday night and announces Lalonde, you guys are going to boo that team off the ice. I think Gerard Gallant is a perfect example. Guy coached this expansion team in the Stanley Cup Finals. I mean, he can coach. Maybe he can get a spark under these guys and maybe save a little bit of this season and maybe get that last playoff spot. But I think Steve has to pull the trigger on this. The guy is kind of a dud as a coach. He shows no emotion. He has no fire. And maybe that's what these guys need.
Thursday night has the chance to be a really explosive night because it's a home game, to your point. If they lose that, they have already been booed off their ice a couple times this season. The fans that go to that hockey game are going to be irate if they lose by 2, 3, 4 goals again.
Mm.
Will we get fire Lalonde chance?
Does that come right after the Jared Goff chance? Because you know you're going to get those, right?
You will.
There was some
at the Pistons game last night.
That's going to happen.
Yep.
So what does it devolve into?
Fire Lalonde doesn't really ring either. Fire Lalonde. It doesn't work.
Newsy?
Fire Newsy. Oh, hitting him with his nickname.
I mean, I guess the closest thing with Jared and Gerard? With Gerard Gallant?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Gerard Gallant. Da, 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 da.
Gerard Goff.
Maybe they go with the replacement versus.
Boy, that sends a hell of a message. Yeah. Anyway, more uplifting things later in the show. We'll talk Lions football for most of it. Dan Campbell at 8:02, 2 Grand Slam at 7:25. Let's get to Heather's news.
Well, as the 3-year anniversary of the Oxford High School school shooting approaches, family members of the victims just continue to seek accountability and answers, right? They want to know about what led up to the shooting. I mean, we know that the shooter and his parents are now both in jail, right? But that's not what they want to know. They want to know, how did this happen? What led up to it? And they want an investigation, and that's basically what they're demanding. They're now demanding that the state government investigate the shooting and the actions that led to it. Because really, to date, no investigation has been completed with 100% participation of individuals who are tied to those events that led up to the shooting. So the families say they're really pushing for this because what they want, improved safety protocols, right?
Yeah.
They want to help out other schools and other students feeling safe. They want to make sure there's threat assessments, and they want to learn more about what is driving these young people to actually do this, because it does keep happening. I mean, yes, it's not happening all of the time, but it is happening frequently, where
every time it happens is terrible. So,
without a doubt.
And I get where they're coming from. Okay, it's one thing to get justice on the shooter and even his parents who had a role in it. The school's responsibility, did they do enough? Is there more they could have done? Right. I think these are all fair questions that parents should ask.
Especially when it's your child who was the victim. You want to know everything, without a doubt. The Mike Tyson-Jake Paul boxing match set betting records at Sportsbook, becoming the most heavily wagered upon fight in years. Not surprising by any means, just the massive amount of people who were even watching or attempting to watch the fight. More bets were placed and more money wagered on Friday night's fight than any other boxing match or MMA fight in sports books. It's pretty crazy. The majority of the bets were on Tyson, but the largest bets were on Paul, including a $1 million wager placed with Caesars Sportsbook in Michigan.
Mm. Well, you had to bet more if you bet Paul because just the way the odds were set.
Yeah. You were going
to
get a big return.
Like live in the fight, I saw it was going south. I did bet it. I didn't get much out of it. I bet 5 to win 1, basically, on Paul mid-fight. But you could tell when Tyson didn't have his legs, when he wasn't moving, it was just a matter of time. It was a dud.
It was a dud, but I think the biggest concern that came out of it is all of the angst for Christmas Day.
Good point.
Will they be able to handle 2 NFL games? That I mean, if you have an event that's going off at 11 o'clock at night, and I was mad because it stayed up and I, you know, it kept buffering or a drop. If it happens Christmas Day, oh.
It's a triple header Christmas Day, right?
I think so. I think there's only two that are on
Netflix.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
AAA expects a record number of Americans to travel for Thanksgiving this year, which is pretty cool, I guess, as long as you know when to leave and when not to leave so you can avoid some traffic, right? Because a lot of people, I will tell you that. So they're expecting just...
Sorry.
John. Be patient, John. Wait, give her a second here.
Yeah. So they're expecting just under 80 million people to head out this year, which is up from about 78 million last year. So that's a lot of people are hitting the town. 72 million will drive, 5.8 million will fly, 2.3 million will take other modes of transportation. So... obviously, it depends on where you're going.
Sure.
For what day is the worst day to travel. But they say the worst days to travel will be next Tuesday from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. and Wednesday from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. Those are the worst days to leave for your holiday.
Is that on the roads?
Those are on the roads.
Okay.
On the roads. The worst times to head home, Sunday, December 1st between noon and 6, and then Monday, December 2nd between 9 and 6.
What counts as travel? Like, we go to my mother-in-law's, and it's like 10 miles away. Is that travel?
No. Like, even AAA. So, in Michigan, they say 2.6 million Michigan residents will travel, and they're saying 50 miles or more. Okay. So, I would say...
I need to know the rules.
Yeah. I would say 50 miles or more based on this.
If you're coming to work, that's travel.
Right.
Travel every day.
Way over 50 miles from Tecumseh to here.
You guys, we can see the first snowfall of the season in Metro Detroit this week.
Wow.
Get ready. So big change in the weather is expected on Wednesday, and the snow could fall on Thursday in Metro Detroit as high temperatures reach only around 40 degrees. Forecasters say the winds will ramp up Wednesday, peak during Thursday and Friday. If you're near the Great Lakes, waves could get very rough. Snow will arrive along with the colder air. So it's here.
Yes, it is. It arrived, but it's still been very mild.
Oh my gosh. It's been really nice. We took a walk last night.
Oh, has it? Finally, in the fall?
Finally.
It has been really nice. What, for 3 days?
It's all
going to
go away.
Yeah. It's a good thing those 75 degrees days are gone.
I don't think we got that brisk fall weather.
Preach.
We just missed it.
Preach,
and that's okay, I guess. I wanted those crisp fall days. We didn't get those, but
damn,
yes, the weather has been nice.
Stupid sun. All right.
Dare it show its face.
Heather with the news.
Warm up the world.
Greg, we need the brain power next. It's 97.1. A lot of belly aching when the 12-team playoff was announced. The critics, it's going to water down the regular season. The games aren't going to mean as much. You look at the landscape the next couple weeks. You've got 20 or more teams playing for seeding, playing for spots, playing for something. There's more meaningful games in college football, but it all comes down to those final 12 teams. Greg, take it away. We know the new methodology.
Yes, last week we presented some empirical data. This week we have more data points to expand on that data as the season evolves. So today we're going to get a little less Kirk Herbstreit and a little more Steve Kornacki. Number one. Oregon, still 11-0, far and away number one. Even when you account for the fact that they played one more game than everybody else, they still have the highest weighted games above 500 per game played. Oregon's 11 versus most everybody else's 10. Number two, and the rest of this top third, razor thin. Number two is Alabama. Nothing from the Mercer win. However, Georgia beating Tennessee is a boost for Alabama, and Alabama now collects those Tennessee wins as third-degree wins. The South Carolina-Missouri game, whoever won that game, was going to be a benefit for Alabama, and they get to double up on the loser of that game's wins. Alabama beat South Carolina, beat Missouri, and Alabama beat Missouri. They double up on those Mizzou wins. Number three is Texas. Decent win against Arkansas. They get the Tennessee wins because Arkansas beat Tennessee in Fayetteville. The Florida win over LSU also boosts them. And don't forget these non-conference games against mid-major clubs. Colorado State wins again and is a 7-3 team. Number four, last of the top third, Notre Dame, not a lot of help from existing wins. Louisville, Stanford played each other. They both lost to Notre Dame, so no blood there. Virginia win. It also adds Pitt's 7 wins, not 8, because of the Clemson-Pitt game. You look at that Clemson-Pitt game. How many teams had hand in that cookie jar? Yeah. It affected 4 teams in Greg Popp. Louisville, at the time of the game, was played because Louisville had beaten Pitt. They had beaten Clemson,
Yes, it's a notable win.
Georgia beat Clemson. Notre Dame, who just played Virginia, beat Pitt. And SMU's win against Pitt. So to the middle third, number 5 is Indiana. They were on a bye, so a slide was a little bit expected from them. However, no extra help from the conference teams that they beat that they hadn't versus games that they hadn't played. So Maryland, Northwestern, Nebraska, Michigan State, all teams that Indiana beat that all lost last week. Right. So no boost for the Hoosiers. Number 6 is Ohio State. Kind of the same boat as IU. A lot of their opponents lost this week or they didn't play. And remember, this week, number 6, Ohio State hosts number 5, Indiana. Should be a good game. Number 7, SMU. The plus for them, they get the win against Boston College. The minus for them is the BYU loss to Kansas. Yep. Now they accumulate those Kansas losses. The loss to BYU weighs them down a little bit more. Pitt not closing the deal versus Clemson. They would have also added those Clemson wins if Pitt had closed the deal against the Tigers. Number 8 is Penn State. Empty calorie win against Purdue. USC and Illinois win boost them this past week. Still sitting on that lone loss to Ohio State. Now we go to the bottom third. Number 9 is Georgia. Tennessee win cuts them way ahead in line. It also recoups the wins against Alabama that they didn't get in their own matchup with the Tide. So Georgia beats Tennessee, beats Alabama. Clemson over Pitt, a nice bonus for them as well. The Texas win helps them out. Now they double up on those Florida wins. Auburn, Kentucky, they get easy wins against lesser teams. It helps them out a little bit. Number 10, BYU. Now, took the loss against Kansas. They succumbed to the same fate as Miami did. The close game that didn't quite go their way. They are traveling to the desert, taking out Arizona State in the Greg Palm game of the week. Why this game? Well, it has real world and Greg Palm implications. First, for Greg Palm, a loss likely knocks BYU out of the top 12 of Greg Palm, vaults Arizona State up. A win against 8-2 ASU also affirms their footing in this top 12. 2, for the real world implications, the game most likely will determine the second spot in the Big 12 title game opposite of Colorado. So, it's the difference between a chance at a first round bye and the loser likely eliminated from the college football playoff altogether. It's playoff bye, top 4 spots, or nothing. The stakes of this game.
Huge.
Number 11 is Boise State, holding steady with their win at San Jose State. No help from Washington State, who lost on the road at New Mexico. And rounding out the top 12 is Miami. Off a bye, bad news for them. USF and Florida are the only teams that Miami has beaten that won last week. So that's the only boost that the Hurricanes are getting.
So there's a lot to digest with this, and this is a huge weekend in college football, and I think if you want to have an idea of how the sport has changed, the opportunity for the little guy, the 3 biggest games in the country involve Indiana, Army, BYU, and Arizona State this weekend. Think about that. Think about what that means, but Greg has laid this out in a way where we can kind of go from it. John, Indiana, Ohio State, is this an elimination game this week?
I think it is for Ohio State. I don't necessarily think it is for Indiana.
Why I ask, and I don't know if it's right or wrong, if Indiana loses a game, they do not have any good wins. They're going to want to cram as many of these two-loss SEC teams in as they can, and they have created a puzzle. Because, John, I respect head-to-head. I think you do, too. Yeah. Here's the problem. Ole Miss beat Georgia. Alabama beat Georgia. So Georgia's got to be behind both of them, right? Well, but Georgia beat Texas. And Georgia beat Tennessee, but Tennessee beat Alabama. You see how this turns into a mess.
Oh, it's a huge mess.
So if Indiana loses, will they try to cram four and even five SEC teams and leave the Hoosiers out?
Well, a lot of this, Jim. Making a big circle with my hand.
So I guess the question of the teams that were left out, as we try and digest all of this, and I have a couple of questions because this is all data-based.
Fire at me, man. I got the whole 134 ahead of me.
Okay. Where do you have Clemson? And where is Colorado?
All right. Clemson is just outside of the periphery. They are 13th.
Okay.
Interesting. And they're very much alive. They need help to get to the ACC title game.
Right.
But if they get the ACC championship, auto spot.
Yeah. Is there only ability to get in by getting the auto bid?
In reality, yes.
In reality.
Clemson's got that South Carolina game to end the season.
Right.
That's a big boost for them.
It could be a big boost.
It helps resume because it's an SEC opponent, but it doesn't help their chances of getting to the ACC title. They're done with conference play.
Yeah.
You asked about Colorado?
Yeah.
Great question. They are 15th, also in the periphery. They are 8-2. Remember, that Nebraska loss is weighing them down. Cornhuskers have lost four straight. They're now 5-5.
All right, so what? Another follow-up before I get to my actual second question. Two SEC teams with two losses, Ole Miss and Texas A&M.
Still alive.
Ole Miss is sandwiched in between Clemson and Colorado. They are 14th. Texas A&M kind of a little bit below the periphery. They are at 18th.
Think about it. Texas A&M still has the Texas game coming up. That rivalry renewed, and it could knock Texas all the way out of the playoff potentially.
Yeah. And now, for my other question, and I don't know if you can do this or if you're prepared to do this.
Okay.
No, I don't know.
Can I guess over under?
Sure.
Is Michigan 88th?
Oh, they're far better than that.
Oh, okay.
I was going to say.
Okay, here's a hint on Michigan. Remember the few of their losses.
Oh, yeah.
Undefeated Indiana.
Okay.
Undefeated Oregon.
Are they top 50?
Yes.
Okay.
I was going to say 42.
Higher.
What?
What? Michigan's higher than that?
Yes.
32.
Exactly, Jim. Good job.
Okay. Wow. Didn't
they
see
are
that
a
coming.
Spot higher than Illinois, by the way.
Okay.
Hang the banner. Oh, hell of a season.
Yeah. Stop it. You just set me up for that. How does this compare to the what your eyes are telling you? When you look at this, and Indiana is 5, Ohio State is 6. If you were ranking them outside of the data, would they be the same? And I guess that question then goes for like BYU. Would they still be a top 12 team if it wasn't for if it was just simply the eye test?
I think BYU would be right about where they are. Ohio State would probably be number 2 behind Oregon because, as I said before, when this was simply opinion based, 1 yard, 1 second, 1 timeout, 1 point,
right,
1 whatever. Before winning that game at Oregon.
Because seeing Alabama at 2 really throws off your eyes.
And it's the boost. It's the boost of a lot of their wins, a lot of high-profile wins for the Terrapins.
So they beat Georgia, which is a huge win, right?
Right.
And who's the other big win that Alabama has? Or is
South
it just
Carolina, Missouri?
Okay, yeah, and those are more Tier 2 wins to me, but Georgia is a big Tier 1 win for Alabama.
And just a quick note, too. You mentioned Indiana. They don't have a lot of marquee wins. I will want to stress this. Your resume is more than just your best data point. It's the summation of everything you've done. And Indiana has the summation.
They don't have a loss.
Right.
But that's what makes this week so important. Same thing could be said for Army, who's undefeated when they play Notre Dame. Some major matchups in college football. It'll all get sorted out on the field. Love the playoff. It's 97-1.
You guys, the holidays are here, and this year, get your girl what she actually wants. Get her a beauty package from Beauty Bird Med Spa. You can choose from any number of their premium offerings, so that could be Botox, filler, or microneedling. And guys, don't worry. If you don't know what those are or which treatments to pick, Amy Wise and her team have you covered. They can walk you through everything and create a personalized package your ladies will love. Plus, they're going to be in great hands. I was just there. I saw Amy, and I couldn't be happier with my microneedling treatment. So don't struggle with the holidays again this year. Visit them in Commerce or head to mybeautybird.com today. That's mybeautybird.com.
Still basking in a Lions victory. We had a phone call yesterday that I think is going to spark a necessary conversation, a conversation that we're excited to have. Phone call reacting to the college football playoff madness. Let's squeeze one in. It's Mike on a cell. You're on 97.1. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Hey, I think Indiana's a fraud, and Ohio State, Ryan Day is just going to say, hey, you guys are Ohio State, they're Indiana, and that's going to power them through a little bit. But, yeah, I think Indiana's going to get boat raced by Ohio State this weekend, and, you know, it's
will they be left out
not
then?
Even a
I guess so. So
yeah,
again, what you're saying isn't radical. They're 11.5-point underdogs, and I don't know that Ohio State's that good. But let's go with your theory. Indiana loses by 17 or more points. They really get throttled. Right. Do they still get in the playoff as a one loss team over two loss SEC teams?
No way. It would be like there's no possible way they can do it. I mean, it's just they're Indiana. They had a hard time beating us, you know, Michigan, and they wanted to do. What's his face? Their head coach wanted to do style points against Michigan. And, you know what I mean? They squeaked one out of there. If we would have played a little bit better, we might have won. I mean, no way. It'd be like, that's as dumb as Michigan running the option against Ohio State, like that old guy wanted them to a couple weeks ago to change it up.
So, again, it gets to this world where Indiana just paid Kirk Cignetti. I think they kind of had to. Yeah. It's the best season in program history, but they did it before the OSU game, meaning like the true litmus test is coming for the Hoosiers.
I'm surprised Cignetti agreed to it, unless he was just looking for...
Well, it was a big payday, right?
Sure, it's a big payday, but, I mean, is there a bigger payday? Would there have been a bigger payday?
Interesting, yeah.
Because what if he just plays Ohio State right down to the wire, let alone beat them?
I don't know that there's going to be an A-level job this offseason, though. Florida's keeping their coach. LSU's not going to get rid of Brian. I mean, maybe Florida State. I don't know how many big jobs are coming open, and if he's getting $8 million a year.
There's always going to be somebody who says, I think he's better than our guy. Mm-hmm. And the finances of college football and paying college football coaches is about to change dramatically with the revenue share.
So I brought this up yesterday on Cash the Ticket, and you know who Kirk Cignetti's extension got compared to? Mike Valenti brought up Mel Tucker. And he said, I'm not talking about hotel rooms and Kirk, but he said he got paid before the Ohio State game. And he talked about how the portal gave him Kenneth Walker and one magical season, and Indiana's used the portal and it's one magical season, and did Indiana jump the gun before getting the head-to-head against Ohio State?
So the question is going to be, sorry, Greg, I keep interrupting you. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, I mean, you mentioned Indiana playing close against Michigan now. It'd be like a team like Georgia playing close against Kentucky.
Exactly.
And
but Georgia does have bigger wins. They have the Texas win. They have the Tennessee win. Those are A-level wins that Indiana does not have on their resume.
True.
As much as I want to stick up for them.
Look, the point, the challenge that is right there in Mike's call. He said, because they're Indiana, because they're Ohio State, that's the perception that Indiana has to face. What I am attempting to do is to cut through that.
Yeah.
Take away the logos. If they wore a winged helmet and were called Michigan and sang the victors, I don't think you'd be saying that.
Correct.
And have the same season play for play, player for player.
Right. And so here's where I just asked the question of, in terms of Cignetti agreeing to that contract or Indiana offering it, is this repeatable in Bloomington? And I don't want to downgrade the job that Cignetti has done. He's clearly a terrific football coach. But will he be able to stack season on top of season? We saw it with Tom Allen. He had a good year. He got paid. And then 2 years later, he was dispatched. And so can you continue to recruit at Indiana? Can you continue to recruit the portal at Indiana? And so that's going to be the question. I mean, could Mel Tucker have continued? I think he would have had a stronger case of doing it at Michigan State versus anybody doing it at Indiana.
Right. Couple quick ticket ticks. This one says, Ohio State lost to the number one team in the nation at their place by 1 point, yet you say they're not that good and Oregon's great. Help me understand this. Oregon has the Boise win, which is a top 25 win. The Ohio State win, wins matter. Actually winning the game is what I'm going to lean on here. And Ohio State does not have, they beat Penn State. That's probably their call.
They beat Penn State, who was ranked 3 at the time.
Yeah.
They lost to Oregon, and then they've played Nebraska, Iowa, Michigan State, Marshall, Western, and Akron.
Yeah.
And Purdue.
Listen, it's a good resume win for Ohio State if they can go take care of business against Indiana, right? Secure that, essentially, a spot in the Big Ten title game, but also the 5 seed worst case scenario, which again, for those that aren't paying attention to the 12-team playoff and all the intricacies, the 5 spot makes you play the worst playoff team on your campus, and then you play the worst likely power champion in the second round. You'd face like the Big 12 winner in all likelihood. So the 5 seed's a really valuable spot for the Big Ten to hold right now.
Well, it's a valuable spot, but what happens? Okay, let's just say Ohio State does beat Indiana and they secure a spot in the Big Ten championship game with Oregon. What's Oregon going to have to do? Travel 2 time zones mm-hmm. to play in Indianapolis. And now it's not a home game for Ohio State, but the travel is 2 hours by bus or, you know, 30 minutes by plane versus, you know, Oregon coming across the country. And that game was settled and won by 1 point by Oregon at home.
Texter says, I feel like Greg's college football board is an evidence board with lots of red strings connecting winners and losers and second cousins and third
sure,
cousins.
Oh, sure. Yes, there's a lot of strings.
There's a lot of truth to that. Okay, we've got some ticket texts on the Red Wings, too. We mentioned them to start the show. If you missed it, Odyssey Rewind. We're just not going to dwell on the Wings in football season. We're going to talk about our football team. The Detroit Lions mm-hmm. keep winning, John, and they are the
number one in the NFC.
Number one team in the NFL, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, by power surge, it is.
Well, has been ahead of the curve, but it's also now everybody's on board. The books have priced the Lions as the favorite to win the Super Bowl, and they have taken fans who used to be doubters, and they've turned them into believers. We had a call yesterday from AC in Detroit, and he's a frequent caller. He called in a couple times leading up to the season. He got kind of, you guys are delusional. This team's not that good. They may
drinking
be
the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, well, he was hitting us with all those. I think at one point I called him a jackass. It got kind of heated, you know, back before the season. Caller AC called in yesterday, and he admitted something. And I want to know if other people will admit it as well, that they have been turned from doubters into believers. You didn't have to be an SOL person. But if you were, I really want to hear that story, that journey of how this team has won you over. But what has it been that's taken you from doubter to believer? And are you someone who considers you were previously a doubter and now you're a believer?
Can I add one more question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Is there someone out there that believes this is a mirage?
Oh, yeah. Are you still holding firm?
Are you still holding firm to anything that you have said preseason is what the Lions have done not enough?
These are great questions. 248-539-9797. We will play caller AC in Detroit coming up next and have that conversation with you guys. It's 97.1.